the last thing I would leave with is just this simple notion that, again, money is so taboo. Money is so many things to so many people. Oftentimes, the way I break into a group setting is asking that question. Finish the sentence. Money is what?
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that the term financial advisor would normally clear the room at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers and providers of financial services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and providing tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. As providers, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with our future clients to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. In today's conversation, we talk with Jedediah Collins about going from pro athlete to certified financial planner. Jedediah is now an Amazon best-selling author and the founder of the Money Vehicle Workshops, where he uses that information that he's learned to empower people about financial literacy and education. We really dive into the challenges of a career changer and why the transition can be very difficult. We get into some of the recommendations that Jed has for career changers and how to leverage their already established network with whatever career they're changing from. In this episode, we talk a lot about perspective and mindset as Jed, as a former NFLer, has the type of tenacity and perseverance it takes to get to the next level. And he provides a lot of strategy and tips for aspiring financial professionals and existing financial professionals as well. I really enjoyed this talk, and I hope you do too. Let's sit back now and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today we got a goodie, Jedediah Collins. Man, I appreciate you coming on. You are a former NFL player, Amazon best-selling author, podcaster, and adjunct professor at Washington State University, who, after being cut 12 times, I'm glad you counted them, a dozen, became the number one fullback in the NFL. You took many principles and behaviors away from the game of football, but was also faced with the reality of how unprepared you were for the financial opportunity of professional sports. This dilemma drove you to study for your certification in financial planning, fellow CFP guy, while you were still playing football, and then transitioning away from football. You knew you would pursue real life experience with your CFP, and you went to work in wealth management. Although a great career, you quickly discovered helping the wealthy was not your passion, and your passion was delivering financial wellness workshops for those at the beginning of their financial journey, not the end. The Money Vehicle Workshops, your best-selling book, Your Money Vehicle, and virtual course are on a mission to teach young professionals how to use money, love the acronym, understand, strategize, and empower. You are a passionate advocate for greater financial awareness, and you have worked closely with countless individuals in the hope that they begin their own financial futures. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Oh, it's always hard to come in after that. It sounds good. No, Dom, I'm excited to be on. I love the message that you're out sharing. And as you mentioned it, the future, the next wave of advisors, what they're going to look like, how they're going to interact, the topics that they're going to be covering, the services, the world is shifting and the game is changing. And it's really neat to see the conversation having begun around, you know, what our industry is going to look like in the future.
Yeah, man, I'm so excited about this topic. I think not only your background as a professional athlete can help inspire career changers, the people I talk to all the time about what this industry is like, but I just think in general, just inspiration as, you know, consumers and providers of financial services listen to this conversation, they can be like, wow, you know, those type of people exist in the industry. Like, why am I messing with this, you know, this person from the broken dealer model? Like, what do I, like, yep. I need to change over. So hopefully we'll get some good vibes going from this. I want to start with who you are. I don't want to, like, we read those resumes and, you know, I always love to give people their flowers while they're still here. Most people react the same way you did, like, man, all that stuff, you know, but that's what you did. That's your resume. That's your legacy you're building. Talk about who you are and, you know, and a little bit about your background before we get into this conversation.
So I always love to introduce myself as a great failure. And, you know, I talk to a lot of young people, students, and they usually have kind of a knee-jerk reaction, especially as I make that comment after my bio. But it's a concept and it's an identity that I really love to share, because so many young people are dealing with social media, that FOMO, dealing with struggling in school, dealing with struggling in their sport or their career, their family life. And so many are dealing with losing. So many are dealing with this concept of what failure is. And as you mentioned in my bio, I was cut 12 times in the NFL and, you know, told my journey and dream were over. But that wasn't the first time I began failing. It was in college when I was humbled and didn't see the playing field, when I was humbled in my major and started to have to get tutoring to survive and succeed in accounting. But it goes all the way back to the backyard growing up with my brothers, where my dad invented a game called King for a Day. And we were a basketball family. I ended up playing football, but the family was all basketball. And my two older brothers were much better than me. They ended up playing Division I basketball. And of the 1,000 times in the backyard playing King for a Day, I remember winning twice. Very vividly, the 2 days I walked off the court as king. And it was that concept, that understanding that I was able to go out onto the field or go out onto the court and understand the outcome was out of my control. But I shifted my understanding of what was in my control. And that was an introduction into who I was growing up, who I've been identified. And really the only reason I'm able to become an entrepreneur and start my own business is because I am comfortable dealing with losses on a daily basis. And if you're an entrepreneur, you know exactly what that means. And so the introduction to me is this concept that, you know, I've had a great amount of success and wins, but I've had 10 times the amount of losses. But if I can leave people with one concept, it is failure. Losing is not the end. Failure is only final when you accept it. And if you have the ability to take something that you've lost at and learn from it, I think you're even better served. Winning is an amazing thing to experience, but it is a terrible teacher. And so as I looked at it, it was, what could I take away from those locker rooms as a professional athlete watching the best in the world perform? And how was I going to take those along with my core principles and insert them into, you know, who I was going to become as a man?
No, that's great. I love that. There's a saying, very similar, and I'm pretty sure people have heard this. You probably heard this, that, you know, champions aren't defined by winning all the time. They're defined by getting back up. Right. So, you know, we're all going to get knocked down by life. And as my grandmother used to say, he's like, if you haven't experienced life yet, baby, just keep living.
It'll come.
Exactly. So, granted, you probably, I mean, you had an accounting degree, so you kind of probably start putting things together that you weren't going to play football forever, right? So, yeah. But why financial planning? Was it the accounting degree background that got you there? Like, what kind of got you towards that? The reason why I ask this question is because I want my audience that always hears me, listens to me, and they hear me talk about finding your why. I'm like, yes. Don't get into this industry unless you find your why. I mean, it's going to be very, very helpful for you when times get hard. So maybe talk about your why and how you got into financial planning.
And I love that. And that is the same place we start as I talk to a 15, 20, 25-year-old about money is, the one thing I can't help you with is finding your why. You know, I can teach you how to set a goal, but the goal has to come from you. Mm-hmm. So in kind of a strange way, the accounting degree was absolutely what drove me to getting into the financial world. but not the way you'd think. It was this concept that I was an accounting major, Beta Alpha Psi. Like I was a business degree, and I got into the NFL, and I looked around and I said, of this locker room, you know, I know most of the guys maybe didn't even graduate. I know very few of them did business. I know my guidance counselor told me they hadn't had a football player do accounting in years. And so I looked at that locker room and I said, I should be the one who understood money, right? I should be the one who was going to get these paychecks and know what to do with them. And my first paycheck came and went as everybody else in the locker rooms, as those statistics that we see stack up of the professional athlete, the big dumb jock walking away from the game without having anything to show for it. And it was shocking to me. It was humbling. It was embarrassing. And as a kid who grew up in Orange County, you know, around money, my father, first in his family to go to college, was a very smart man and running a law firm, but never educated on money, never spoke to us about money. My mother never educated or spoke to us about money. And I looked at it and I said, how could I have gone through college, been a business degree, and still had no financial literacy? I as a rookie, was still financially illiterate. And that was my light bulb. You know, I saw that first check come and go, and I started to ask myself what I was going to walk away from the game with. And once I really started to discover that there was a language out there around money that I needed to go learn, I started on my own path. You know, I started going to Borders and bookstores and reading and finding the financial literacy gurus, and really just accepting this idea that I needed to learn a foreign language. And it was on that journey and that path where I looked at my brothers in the locker room, and then I looked at my brothers and my family. One was getting a Harvard law degree. The other was getting a master's in engineering at Berkeley. And it was upon our conversations where they started asking me about money that I realized, like, this is not a athletic department problem. This is a campus-wide, this is a nationwide issue. And that was kind of the beginning of Money Vehicle. Was Jed, as a personal story, had to get empowered. But then as I did, I started to have those conversations with other guys in the locker room. And it began this idea of how could I tell stories to get people to understand this foreign language. And that was kind of the beginning, was a humbling realization that I was financially illiterate. And now I'm on a passion and a journey to eliminate as much financial illiteracy in our communities today.
Man, that's great. I it's so many pathways that you opened up that I could hop down these bunny trails. I think one of the first ones is I think one of the first ones is the self-work that you did. I often tell aspiring financial professionals, even existing financial professionals, I'm like, it's very hard to give away something you don't have. I'm like, don't do your future client a disservice, nor yourself, by not doing the self-work or of maybe hiring a financial planner or either doing your own financial plan. Like, do that work. It makes you so much more sensitive to what clients are going through, like what you talked about, your own money story, how your parents didn't talk about it. All those motifs surface when you're starting to work with a client. And if you haven't dealt with it yourself, it's going to be kind of hard for you to get them to where they need to go. I think that's the first thought. What are your thoughts around that?
It's the curse of expertise. And people in our world are so numb and so distant to the idea that if you mention to somebody, you know, we're going to diversify your portfolio by, you know, allocating you into different market segments, and we're going to use these mutual funds, you've now spouted off seven different things that people have no idea what you mean. And it made you feel powerful. It made you feel intellectual, but it lost the connection. And I look at it, and, you know, something I get to challenge young advisors who have gone through my course, not from an educational perspective, but from a communication perspective, and said, if you are able to document something as you learn it, you are going to be able to go back to the beginning of the journey and help and guide the next person through. Just as you said, I think you should begin by setting your own financial plan. I'm a big, big advocate of journaling. I've journaled since I was 16, 17 years old. And people ask me how you can stand in front of a room and deliver. It starts with a journal. It starts with scripting out your thoughts. But I love this idea that you called out of that curse of expertise. You need to be humbled back to the beginner's mindset. Where is your client starting? And it's really hard to remember that if you didn't document it. And so I take every topic. Currently, right now, it's blockchain and NFTs. And I have been diving into this subject and learning, but I've been keeping note of what were my questions? Where was I lost? How do I? And that's why I can go back and help guide somebody through that journey. So that curse of expertise is a really big hurdle, especially in the financial world, because you play with that. Well, I want to validate that I know what I'm talking about. But more importantly, I want to have that connection with my client that they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think it is a delicate balance. I think what I've defaulted to is just being transparent and only showing up as a version of Dominique that is the most authentic, which is, you know, I've had a repossession. I've had, you know, my house rental property foreclosed on. Like these are things on my story, in my story. Now, what I often tell people, and you said this earlier, you know, because you fail doesn't mean you're a failure. Mm-hmm. Failure can be either a state of mind or it can actually be just a point in time. So you get to write that narrative, and whether or not you use that for the good and tell that story and learn from it and help others is totally up to you. You know, some people decide to wallow in that. And I think, you know, what I've found is most clients don't want to work with somebody that's perfect. They want to work with somebody that's honest. So yeah. I think the other thing that you brought up, and you probably have better statistics on this than I do, when you're talking about, you know, kind of leveling the playing field and getting as much financial literacy across as many minds as you can. The last time I checked, it was like maybe mid-teens, 13, 14 states that require financial literacy to graduate, which is just kind of ridiculous because it just perpetuates the cycle of how the, you know, using Carl Richards' term, the financial pornography network market to people and just take advantage of them. I wonder if you have any thoughts about that and maybe why you've steered your focus to say financial literacy and financial education versus working with the affluent or the wealthy.
So first off, and I wrote it down because I loved how you said failure is a state of mind or a point in time. Mm. I thought that was excellent. So I love writing things down that hit me in the right way.
You can have that, man. You can have that.
I'm going to take that. I'm going to make a t-shirt. But as I look at it, how I began down this journey was trying to be that authentic helper. Walking into, you know, a room and everybody, when I was leaving the game of football, was like, oh, great. Do you know what's awesome about you going into wealth management? You just get to call all these guys in the locker room and they all have a bunch of money. You're going to have a client base in no time. And my response to them was, well, I don't know anything yet, so I'm not calling anybody. And so as I looked at that transition of who was going to be my ideal client, who I truly wanted to help, it was this introduction to, again, looking at myself. My mom, my dad, great parents, but never spoke to me. So where were the communities? Where were the people that never had this accessibility to the language of money, to wealth creation? And that's a big misunderstanding. You know, the financial literacy of old was just simply don't spend more than you make. If you were saving, you were financially literate. Today, Money Vehicle is kind of redefining financial literacy and saying being a saver is a very valid and important first step. But if you don't become an investor, if you don't take that step and actually have your money start working for you, you're still going to fall in that plan that doesn't succeed and in that term of financial illiteracy. And so as I saw where my journey was headed, my passion was truly being a teacher. And as I got to begin relationships with NFL teams, as I got to go into companies or colleges, even high schools. Last week, I went from delivering to the Seattle Seahawks to the Washington DECA conference, pro athlete to a high school student. How could I do that without any objection to my purpose, to why I was there? And everybody continually said, Jed, it's very cute. You like financial literacy, but are you getting clients? That's the objective of doing that. It's a lost leader. And I looked at it and I looked around. I said, well, what companies are truly just doing financial education? Most of them primarily being nonprofits. There really aren't many. As I look at a virtual financial literacy course, there's very few comparables to a built-out curriculum that could go into a high school or college. Why is that? Is because it hasn't been financially, you know, solvent to play in this space. And so my goal and objective was to say, I still think the advisory world is needed now, probably more than ever, because of how complex this financial industry has become. But how could I, you know, dealing with hundreds, thousands of clients, how could I build out the first 10 steps? You know, when you go to an advisor, it's, hey, do you have $100,000? Do you have 50 grand that we can put in an account and I can start to work with? Well, how do we get somebody to that point? And that's really where Money Vehicle starts, is let's start at zero. Let's start with that first step of setting a goal. And then what are the first 10 steps? And as I looked at who this audience was going to be, I 100% agree with the people who look at financial literacy and say, they're not going to really get it until they need it or until they use it. But the amazing thing about the college and high school student today is they are making an income. With this virtual digital world, a lot of them have these side hustles and side jobs that the income stream has begun. And so how do you build out the first couple steps of a financial plan, introduce them to the holistic wheel of being a certified financial planner? Yes, investments are sexy and fun to talk about, but that's just one spoke in the wheel of your financial plan. And so my kind of epiphany was, in 5-10 years, could I wake up and know I could be a partner at a big firm and have a great book and make an important impact on this 100 families of clients? Or would I regret not pursuing this passion to say, I bet I can get 1 million 18-year-olds to take one step, to get one action, and to not just say they're financially literate, but to show us by going and taking that action. So that big vision action is setting up a Roth IRA. The course builds up to that. We cover a lot of different topics. But if we look at a graduating high school senior and say they've already begun a Roth IRA, we know they are worlds ahead of the last generation, worlds ahead of their peers, and they are making a statement that says, I am financially literate and I want to take control of my financial future.
No, wow, I love that. There's so many implications for that. I've said that the reason why I'm doing what I do, of course I love this, but at the end of the day, I believe good financial advice has the ability to change family trees, and everybody deserves the opportunity to change their family tree. That's the only way we do normalize the conversation around generating wealth, and for all the good that it can do. I wonder though, as you're going through this process in time, and you put in a lot of tools, so I hope people are taking notes as they're listening, because you know, the journaling, being able to script out things, reminds me of Hal Elrod's Savers, you know. Yes. Silence, affirmation, visualization, exercise, reading, and then scripting is the last one, you know.
Love it.
You know, that journaling component is really big to make sure that the things that you're bringing in and you're gathering in each day, you're actually able to capture them and go back to them at some point in the future. And on that point, I want to talk about the challenges of that transition. Not the most easy, I think, from going to number one fullback to nobody knows who I am because you're starting Cuticle. Over. That's what a lot of career changers tell me, you know, and this was a thought that got brought to me by somebody I worked with individually, was that they were leaving their career, all the reputational and social capital they built up, and they were starting over. And the emotion of that actually hit her. And she was like, who am I? And so I was like, wow, you know, I never really thought about it from that standpoint. So maybe you can talk about that challenge, because I know there's a career changer or two going to listen to this, and they're going to be like, I got some identity issues that I'm going through.
And so I love to share, and it's kind of a joke, but the biggest change for me going from, you know, NFL stadium to a cubicle was nobody clapped for you anymore. And that was a hard transition. As an athlete, our identity is built around that immediate affirmation. I made a good play. Why? Because I could hear the applause. And so that was kind of a humbling piece. A segment, a side note to this, is this new movement of NIL, name, image, and likeness, for the college and high school athlete. I think the biggest kind of positive that is going to come from this, and the whole concept can be debated, but the positive that is going to come is it's forcing college and high school athletes to see themselves as more than an athlete, to identify that transition years before the vast majority of us had to. So I think that's a caveat that we're missing in the benefits of this. But the transition, the sense of identity, the sense of purpose, I was talking to a former NBA player this morning, and it is that simple start. You don't start from scratch. I cannot say that enough. You do not start from scratch when you transition careers. If you have ever played a sport, if you've ever studied for a test, if you've ever been in a family environment, you have a core set of principles, of behaviors, of practices that you have inherently and innately in you. And that's what you bring to this new career. So you don't start from scratch. Sure, some people may have a few years of the network already built. Some people might have this, that, or the other. But you have to identify, who is that person? I am going down this road for, as you mentioned, your why. I've set that yardstick, that destination. And as I go, that it becomes my driving force and factor. Whether you're a professional athlete, you're leaving high school, you are in a different part of the financial industry, or never been in the financial industry, and this is the path you're going down, I really challenge people to identify, what is the destination? What is your purpose? But then what is your objective? And as long as you have a road, the road is going to go crazy. It's going to go left, right, up, down. There's even going to be some times it tells you to turn around. But as long as you look and know, I am going down this, and I have with me this tool belt of my personal skills and what I am good at and have confidence in, that is where that transition really happens. People look at me and are like, how easy was it for you? You knew it. It was not easy at all. I was fortunate to get cut so many times and be forced to see what the world after football looked like. That's why I had a direction. But because I had a direction, the game was done with me and I was done with it, and I could get up and I could walk. The people who struggle are the ones who never get off the couch. So my best encouragement in the transition is choose a direction, start walking, and everything else will become clear.
No, I love that you said that. And yeah, I want to reframe that also to the start from scratch, because that is a mindset also that you can change. You can change that talk track, right? Because we all, what we always talk about in Jumpstart is the transferable skill set, right? And, you know, you have a core set of skills, as you said, and it's a matter of shaping them, maybe refining them a little bit, repositioning how you're saying that. Maybe your LinkedIn profile needs to change. Maybe you hire a coach to help you with that. But the point is there is a core set of skills that I've talked to, and I'm pretty sure you have too. I've talked to our RIA owner after RIA owner, and what they've always said without, you know, any variance is, look, I would take somebody with the empathy, the communication, the ability to de-escalate conflict. I would take those skills over technical skills all day. Because I can teach the technical skills, but some of those other skills, you know, from being a parent or, you know, working a job for 15 years in HR or something like that, that kind of stuff you can't teach. So it's a matter of really reframing your mind and be like, OK, so this is what I like to do. This is how I think it can translate to financial services. What's the first step in becoming a successful financial professional? Well, doing your homework. And there's no better place to understand the financial services industry than Jumpstart University. With video after video of hours and hours of content on topics like the different careers available in financial services, advice for making the switch as a career changer, what to consider when becoming an independent financial professional, how to attract and retain new clients, what's involved in becoming a certified financial planner, and day in the life of a financial advisor, with so much more. All of this for free. You just got to click through the YouTube ads. So head on over to YouTube now to check out Jumpstart YO University. You can find that at youtube.com/JumpstartYOUniversity. Now, let's get back to the conversation. One thing I want to put in with that, just kind of parenthetically, is the ability to do the research with the why, and maybe what your thoughts are about this, because this is pretty, this comes up a lot. This is going off of script just a little bit, a little bonus for everybody listening. So there's always this I would say the debate in the mind of the career changer about, okay, do I go back to school? Do I start CFP classes? Do I do all this? Or do I just try to go in and get some experience, right? Either one of them, you're going to have to spend the currency of either time or money, or maybe both on each. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what your thoughts were, because you had somewhat of a different setup, being that football's not, you know, 365 days of the year, but maybe it is. Maybe I don't know. I've never been there. But like, how did you balance your time and figure out, you know, education versus CFP versus just going in and getting experience? Maybe some thoughts around that.
And a lot of people give me credit, and I appreciate it, saying, well, you're playing in the NFL and studying for your CFP. And I look at them, I go, we have an off season. It's very easy to utilize that time wisely if you're conscious of it. What is amazing to me are the people who work, you know, 8 to 6 and then go home and study for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and take these CFP tests on the weekend. That is a challenge. So if I were to look at a young person today truly starting out and saying, I think I want to be a CFP, I would say start with the education. I would say spend a year, 2 years, and go past all of those before you even enter into the field. Why? Because I think it is a prerequisite today. I don't think you can become an advisor in this day and age and not be a CFP if you're just starting out. I think there are a lot of people who have the experience to say, yeah, I don't need that necessarily. I have my clients. But if I'm starting in my 20s or my 30s and I'm saying I'm going to do this for the next 30 years, those three letters or some version of three letters behind your name are the resume that you need to sit in front of clients and say, I've spent the time. I've done the coursework. So as you look at it, yeah, there is going to be a ton of opportunity. There is a ton of areas that you can start in and look whatever road you want to go down, whether that's a focus in insurance, a focus in estate planning, a focus in investments. See what those credentials behind your name are going to hold the most weight. And if you do want to be a generalist and kind of the overseer of all, you know, I don't think there's a better designation than the CFP, and I would recommend starting it now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that too much. I think what I've told people, I said, there's three reasons I would tell a career changer, and I've said this before. So let's just say you're coming off a 10 or 15 year career or something. I was like, CFP makes sense if you know that you're going to be doing financial planning and your employer is going to require it. Absolute no-brainer. Yep. There's no reason why you wouldn't start. there's also an instance where I think, you know, if you're young, like you said, and you're going to a school that's got a financial planning program that's taking you through the education, and then at the end, all you got to do is buy a review course and sit for the exam. Like, what are you waiting for? And then there's been a couple of instances that's happened. People go like, no way. But I was like, yeah, you know, some people are like, I want to know how to hire my financial planner, and I see them start the education stuff. I mean, it's rare, but it does happen.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, any other instances, you need to really focus on your why, because A, this is not the cheapest designation to get from a time or money standpoint.
Or key.
And you've got to give up a lot. I'm telling you, it's 2 to 3 years of your life and almost 10 yep. grand. So, I mean, are you ready to sacrifice that is the question.
No, and that's you're right, though. That is the magnitude of the decision. And it is not only time and treasures, but the challenge. I mean, it is not an easy process, one that's getting harder year in and year out to pass. So, yeah, there is a good measurement of what is my investment going to be.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, man, as we bring this in for a landing, I want to talk about how you're impacting. I know you've kind of weaved it into the narrative now, but I want to specifically talk about the money vehicle and the type of I guess mindset or personality or whoever you're looking for that fits that. And so maybe we can kind of go down that rabbit trail for a little bit.
Love to. And so again, money vehicle is arguably one of the best virtual financial literacy courses in America. We provide an opportunity to become certified in financial literacy, which is a great resume builder. And who we're really aiming to target are 15 to 25 year olds, people just starting out in their plan. Where I work with advisors and high schools and colleges are advisors love to look at their clients who are getting these questions. I have a 13-year-old. I have a 15-year-old. I have an 18-year-old. I got a 22-year-old. They don't know anything about money. Where do you start? I know a lot of advisors love to begin those conversations, but time is our most precious resource. So what Money Vehicle allows you to do is have some of that conversation before they get in the room. Hey, did you watch the videos for chapters 3 and 4? Because when you get here, we're going to really dive into what those are actually going to do and how you actually complete them. Again, you never open an account or anything with Money Vehicle. We are educators. And so where we are looking and what's really neat is we're in about 10 states nationwide for high schools. We're in even more than that on college campuses with some national partnerships. But what we want to do is provide this curriculum. High school teachers being required, as you mentioned, there's up to, I think, about 20 states now, Ohio being the latest to announce you're going to have to pass this kind of course to graduate. They can create the standards. It's very hard for government or anyone to create the content. Money Vehicle is that provider. We want to be a subject matter expert and allow you to still be the facilitator. And so that's how we get to kind of intertwine and integrate into these curriculums and these programs is saying, hey, a nonprofit who has 100, you know, members across the city or across the country, how do they unify and all take the same kind of course? We're allowing that to happen. 400 students at a single high school, you can all go through the same program and process. And so it's been a really neat ability to kind of see where we're going. But as you can imagine, the biggest hurdle we have is getting people to understand the offering and how it can benefit them, because there just hasn't been an industry that says we are purely financial education. There are definitely some companies out there doing it and doing an amazing job, but to have the on-demand virtual turnkey resource is very few and far between.
No, and I'm going to give you a chance to kind of maybe take us behind the scenes with an example of that. But I, you know, for someone who's been doing this for over 2 decades now, my perspective is such that the financial services industry has taken more in rents, if you will, than they have given back in benefit. And the reason why I say that is because of the amount of marketing that is done to overwhelm the consumer with the pressure of that they're not keeping up with the Joneses, or they haven't done this, or have you saved $1 million, or have you know, all these different things, which in and of themselves are not bad. You know, inherently, most financial products aren't bad unless you're trying to sell, like, you know, some index annuity to a 90-year-old grandmother or something like that, then you've got a problem. But I guess my point is, most of these products aren't bad, otherwise they wouldn't sell. It's just that the context in which they're offered often is misplaced. Mm-hmm. And instead of sitting down with a client, which is the reason why I love the CFP curriculum, and going through the holistic process by what are your goals, getting to know them, collecting information, making the best recommendations based on where they are. I think this is where Money Vehicle can kind of help, because it starts that conversation with people being even aware and helping them articulate their goals to you. That's one of the things that I've realized in being on business on my own is most clients can't even really articulate to you what they want. And that comes from all the gaps that we've been talking about in this conversation with the brokenness of our public education system in regards to financial literacy. So maybe you can kind of take us behind the scene of what some of the things that the Money Vehicle allows somebody to do, help them with that transformation, help them with that articulation of what they, you know, they appear, what a money, how money is showing up for them in their lives and what they want it to do for them.
Absolutely. And I love your call out. And a quote I've constantly heard about financial products is most are sold, not bought. And I agree with you. I don't think inherently any product is wrong. I think it could be manipulated to be this is for everyone and nothing is for everyone. And so as you looked at it, you called out that first kind of acceptance point of Money Vehicle is set out to shift the mindset of money. Money is not a noun. It's not the destination. Money is a vehicle. It's a verb, a tool that you help get to your destination. $1 million retirement, I think, needs to be retired. We shift it into your freedom number, into how your lifestyle, you set that and you understand my lifestyle affords me this. And then if I wanted to be free, here is my personalized number. And so freedom is very personal. Retirement is, again, that kind of number we pull out of the air. And so where we look at the money vehicle journey, you start with that goal setting, and then you start to understand how money is created, this concept of compound interest. And once you understand the investor mindset, you look at your cash management. We have a five bucket system that every paycheck you go through will pass through that cash management system of setting up those five categories. Once you have those categories, you look at where are you going to set up your bank accounts? So transitioning to those foundational accounts. Again, that world is evolving and changing daily. And as you look at these foundational accounts, you got to enter into this other concept that is going to tie to young people, your credit score, sure. But what's the difference between debit and credit cards? Opposed to Dave Ramsey, who's one of the other financial courses out there, we encourage students to get a credit card. We empower them on how to use it wisely, how to find a good one. We have instructions on that. But yes, you need a credit card. And yes, you need to start creating your credit score. If not getting your credit card, become an authorized user on your parents' credit card. Then you look at chapter six, where you start to go into investing and you introduce to the fundamentals. You also introduce to diversification, stocks, bonds, but leading them, again, what is our action item? Index fund. If I am a young person, I want to take my first step in investing, an index fund. Our investment philosophy in three words, be average, index. That is my first introduction into the investment world. Be average, use an index. Then we jump into this concept around risk. And how do you transfer risk? Well, that's an introduction to insurance. What is a premium? What is a deductible? How do most students get introduced to insurance? Is through their car. So how does an auto insurance policy actually work? Then you transfer into what is arguably one of their biggest risks is cybersecurity. How do you defend and identify cyber attacks and a simple action item around creating a better password? Then you go into chapter nine, where we get some of our best reviews around the subject of taxes, which we shift into calling it society. In your five choices, one of the choices is society, not taxes. Society gives a more positive spin on it, but we take them to an ice cream parlor to teach the progressive income tax bracket. One of the most misunderstood piece in American culture is how the income tax system actually works. And so we introduce them to taxes and we land, as I mentioned earlier, into that Roth IRA. And so you look at these stepping stones and these actions. The goal at the end of this will be that you've set your goal, you've become an investor, you've set up your cash management system, you have your bank accounts, you're starting to build credit, you've made your first investment, you understand your insurance policies, you're defending yourself in cyber attacks, you can look and identify your tax brackets, and then you have landed on your best advantage as a young investor, which is that Roth IRA, because the future tax liability that you get to mitigate and remove is going to be a big, big feature going forward. So again, holistically, that is our level one certification. We have our building level two, and we're going into more in, you know, what is the next step in a lot of these pillars. But that is where we want a student to start. If a student ends and says, I am financially literate, Money Vehicle certified, they've passed a holistic exam on those 10 topics, and they've shown us evidence of one action item that they've taken. Empowerment is a big, big piece of what we're out to do.
No, I love that. And I can only imagine a lot of the residual benefit from that. I'm just even thinking about being an employer that's looking at someone that is financially literate versus not. Now, granted, in today's society, that's not something that's really apparent. But if there was something on your resume or your LinkedIn profile that said, Money Vehicle certified, and somebody's like, what is that? And then somebody goes into it and they beautifully articulate like how they understand money.
Yeah. Like, I'm hiring that person because they understand the value of a dollar, right? And so Dominique, I'm even thinking about some other stuff that works with that narrative.
Our best stories are from students who say, I just interviewed for a job or I applied for college, and this is the question that they asked is, what is that thing? What does that mean? And you're absolutely right. It is a moment in a proactive way to say how positively you've influenced your career, because corporate America's number one concern right now is financial wellness. Yeah. And so, yes, that is absolutely a benefit and a ability to put it on your resume.
No, I love that.
And we're going to NFT it. So that's the next phase.
Wow. That's we'll have to get you back for part two to talk about that. You know, when you were going through that, I was just thinking the first of all, the comprehensiveness of the program, and then the progression and the sequencing of that. And it just reminds me of what I tell people financial planning is. I was like, very simply, financial planning is, how do I take my limited time and money and spread that across unlimited choices? Because that's what everybody has. That's what people come to us for. They don't necessarily come to, I'm not of the persuasion that they come to us for more information. They come to us for context.
Yes.
Because they've got so much information. In 2021, we've got a lot of information, man. I mean, like overload. So it's like, Dominique, how can you simplify my life? How can you help me simplify for the stuff that's noise versus signal? So no, I love that you said that. So in closing, man, this is a podcast that you know is to help empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their client at the next level. With that said, Jed, what word or words of wisdom would you like to leave with everyone?
If your clients are asking for financial literacy, obviously reach out, yourmoneyvehicle.com. We would love to be able to license or provide the course for your clients, but most more importantly, their kids. The last thing I would leave with is just this simple notion that, again, money is so taboo. Money is so many things to so many people. Oftentimes, the way I break into a group setting is asking that question. Finish the sentence. Money is what? And as an advisor, if I kind of ask questions like that of my clients, I think that will give me a beautiful perspective of both their background, their upbringing, and really what the relationship is today. Then having an unobjective acceptance of that and saying, we can improve upon that or change it or do whatever we want in the future, but that's who you are right now. This is what money is, your relationship with it. And I think that's just a great place to begin, because oftentimes people have very little understanding around really this, even how money impacts their daily lives.
No, I love that. I think if I was to sum what you just set up, I would say that as advisors, our job is to first be human. We've got to introduce more of the human factor into this profession, because that's just where it's going. And I think that's what clients are needing the most. So I love that. No, I would, and just parenthetically, I would say that this is a great opportunity for a client that is struggling, let's just say, to talk with their children about money. Like they don't know how to, maybe they don't feel like they're well versed in it, or they've made money mistakes or whatever.
Or their kids don't want to listen to their parents.
Yeah. It sounds like a great way to maybe be a conversation starter. So maybe that's another way to kind of use this too. So great stuff, man. I really appreciate you spending your time with the audience. Definitely got to have you back. I feel a lot of synergy in our platform. So wish you nothing but the best of luck in the future.
Hey, keep being you, keep spreading the right message, and I appreciate you having me on.
All right, man. Take care, Jed. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional,
or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.